Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
If you're doing like the daily things and you get off like a week and a half,
yes.
Do you recommend going back and extending your year or catching up?
Well, first thing you have to do is grasp the book with both hands and then strike your forehead firmly. Once for every day you missed, Chris. No, you just go on. If you miss a few days, you just go back to the last one. Keep your little bookmark on there.
Okay.
They work in order, and if you completely forget what you're doing, start over.
Okay. All right, yeah, that makes sense, of course.
Don't ever catch up. Don't do two or three in a day, even though some of them are short. The shorter lessons are short because the suggestion in that short lesson can blow your fuse. Or be missed entirely. It's not because it's a small message. I mean, like lesson 318, for example. Short lesson is one paragraph. But in that lesson is a very small sentence. You were created as. That's a pause for dramatic effect. You were created as the thing you seek. Mm-hmm. You could miss that if you just read through it and get up in the car and go to work. That's not to be missed. No way! You know, the book's full of that stuff. So, yeah, you just go on in order. And the lesson that follows the one you're on is likely to explain the one you're on. It sets up the question deeply in your heart and your mind. And then after you've stewed on it and worked on it, and actually come up being settled with the question, the next one can be the answer. It takes 2 days to fully integrate that with this radical teaching that we're doing. Welcome to A Course in Miracles. I'm Andrew.
David.
Anna. Pam. Kim. Marcia.
Julie.
Walt.
Mark.
What's up?
Chris.
Cecilia.
Awesome. Okay, so we have gathered here tonight to give you a new budget. A new budget on your spiritual pathway. You see, poverty doesn't only apply to money. It means you can't afford something. It means you don't have this overwhelming amount of whatever to get something else. Poverty. We're here with this book, with this dedication to our spiritual awakening, to give you a new budget. Hopefully when we're done, you'll be able to afford more of that which you seek. So many times, especially we who have met several times in this room on this book, we have an idea of what peace is, even how it feels. We've gone into meditations and we come out going, yeah, I'll take more of that. And yet, the world closes back in not soon after we leave. Minutes, hours, days. Just like the water closes behind your finger when you run it across the top. Indeed, you made a line in the water, but so soon, where is it? So soon. That's because the water does not afford, with its characteristics, to keep the line there. So like your ego does not afford for you to be happy and free and joyous for too long. Because if you're happy and free and joyous for too long, pretty soon you will start to feel loving. You will start to want to go beyond your little self, where your ego is safe. You will start to be feeling trusting. And the ego is vulnerable when you trust. You will start to feel tolerant of others and differences. If you're happy for too long, if you're joyous for too long, you will start to want to go and embrace something and loan your strength where maybe it's needed. If you're happy for too long. So you do not have a budget to be so happy as to be truly loving here. That keeps the ego as having the answers to your problems. Because it knows how to attack, knows how to defend, and knows how to keep you from losing. Knows how to make you worry about losing the things you already have. It knows perfectly how to do that. And somehow that feels really smart and wise. But it's based on a small budget, see, for happiness. We're here to give you a bigger budget. We'll show you that you have some in reserve in your creation that you've been denying. Happens every time I do the workbook. Every single time I go through these lessons, I discover, wow, have I been hiding this in me all along? I've been in my own way. Yeah. The book says, yeah, but, you know, no real problem. It's just, you know, you've been without happiness. You've been denying happiness. Happiness has been waiting for you the whole time. Okay, so we need to once again, we're in a section called, this is Sin versus Error. That's a section of what we're studying tonight. Sin versus Error. So let's take a few moments and think about this aspect of our minds and our lives. Let's think about this one word, mistake. Let's think about this word, mistake. Drink it in now. What is a mistake? Look, something happened, right? Otherwise, there's nothing to talk about, to call a mistake. So, whoops. And you did it. A mistake has occurred. What happens with your body and your mind, your brain, when I say, hey, listen, you just did this, and I guess that's a mistake, right? What happens to you when a mistake is found? Now, how does it feel in you now, your feelings here, when you see somebody else make a mistake? It was their elbow as they turned, trying to be helpful, and they turned and knocked it over, and look what happened. What happens to you when that happens to somebody else? Now what's the mistake? What is your invitation at a moment like that? Is there something you want to do when somebody else makes a mistake? And finally, please pick a word or a phrase that answers this little question. You might share this with the group where you can pass. We go around. And it is this. What is the opposite of a mistake? What's the opposite of a mistake? Anybody have a dictionary definition of a mistake? What's a mistake? What does it mean?
I think it means that there's an opportunity that you didn't take. that, oh, you know, it's a missed opportunity.
A missed opportunity. Certainly. What's a mistake? What happens when you miss the opportunity, then what?
A misjudgment.
Or a misjudgment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, misperception occurs, and I didn't get it. I didn't take the right view, so I mistook, and look what happened.
Mm-hmm. An action or judgment that is misguided or wrong.
It induces guilt.
With it, it induces guilt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a cost to a mistake, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Or shame, yeah, guilt or shame. Mm-hmm.
Mark?
I think of it as something like a mistake, you know, I mean, you can make errors, but a mistake would be like, you know, putting your foot on the gas when you meant to put it on the brake.
Yeah. You meant to do something. Your heart, your mind, your attention was with one thing, but you slipped and you did the other.
Yeah.
And there were consequences.
They're not, but, you know.
Maybe not, but at least there was the mistake. There was unreliable event happened.
Yeah.
There was a break in reliability. Mm-hmm. Break in intention.
Yeah. A lot of things you might consider to be a mistake, but an actual mistake would be, I mean, what is a mistake? But a mistake, it's like you can make a mistake. You can think that you're doing one thing and then actually end up doing something else.
Yeah.
You know, or want to do. I think it has to do with intention, maybe.
Yeah.
Like you intend to do one thing.
Yes.
And then you end up doing something different.
So it's a failure to execute.
Yeah. Or like I said, a judgment. You know, a misperception. What takes you back to miracles? Mm-hmm. Error in perception.
An error occurred when you moved your foot. An error occurred and derailed the intention. Something else happened, and it wasn't intentional. It was, can we say, out of control for a minute?
Yeah, maybe.
Careless.
Somehow. Yeah, a little, I mean, after all, you wouldn't make a mistake if you're really careful, would you?
Well,
I mean, really careful?
I can be an honest mistake, too.
That's an honest mistake. He really meant to hit the gas. Tell it to the judge, they said.
It seems like there's some kind of continuum to this whole thing, you know, where I'm listening, because then there's a thing where people would be in a conversation with somebody and say, well, you know, I made a big mistake in my life. So there's this further down the road where it's used as a big judgment, something.
And in that case, you intentionally did something wrong over and over and over again. And then later you look back and say, boy, well, that was a mistake. I'm not so sure. You were really busy doing it for, like, what, how long was the marriage? A long time. You can't call that a mistake, really. What is that? That's something else. So there's a mistake where you didn't know you were hitting the wrong pedal. You meant to hit the gas, but every time the car slowed down, later you figured it out.
You could be walking through your house and then, you know, like, accidentally brush against something and a vase breaks or something, but you didn't see it coming and it just happens. I don't know. I don't think that's a mistake.
There's a little out-of-controlling thing happened there.
Yeah.
Now, that's
not a mistake because you didn't know, you didn't have no foresight about it. I mean, it just...
Oh, yes. So here's something that happened that you fully...
You should have made a mistake. You should have.
Right, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a quality of mistake. You should have done it differently.
Goes to judgment again.
Here's an event that was completely out of your control. But you're the one who did it. I mean, we saw your elbow hit it. Look, Mark, it's, you know, you.
Don't take the corner so fast, Mark.
Yeah. Masako.
Well, when I think of a mistake, I think of a correction as an opportunity to set things right, or make another choice, choose again.
So you caught the mistake, and you have, like, some opportunities here. After all these years, I get it. Yeah. I like this continuum of experiences that go along with mistake. Yeah. All right, anybody else wanted to, before we jump into the opposite of a mistake, anybody else want to point out what a mistake is?
I always look at it in two ways. One, it creates all that guilt. You make a mistake, and like you're saying, something you're doing over and over again, and you just feel, oh, what do I did? I'm so screwed up, and you get guilty, and all that stuff gets in there, and you then you hide it away. Or the other way I like it is, cool opportunity. I know something, a mistake, now I can undo it, get rid of it, let it completely be gone from my mind. It kind of, if you do it right, it's not even there anymore. That's the way I like to look at it.
Nice. Yeah.
Two great opportunities.
Forgiveness.
Yep.
Forgiveness.
Yeah.
That's the fun part.
Usually there's a double entendre, though.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
You drop something, and then you beat yourself up for dropping it, and then, you know, that's a double mistake.
Double standard.
You know? Yeah, because then you're put in this fear-based reality, like, what, can't even get this right, and then you go off on that.
Yes.
And it's all kind of unreal when you look at it.
The ego rides again. It got on the horse and it whipped it because you broke the vase, which is a pure mistake. Mark says, oh, geez, I just, you know, and I got this new shirt and it sticks out a little further than the other one and it knocked over the... But the ego can come in and say, boy, you should have realized, or maybe it's a big snow jacket, you should realize that you're bigger in a jacket walking by these delicate things, and you beat yourself up, which is really unrelated to the vase, isn't it? Or the cost of it, the repair of it, or the... We're just beating you up, you sloppy, overdressed person. Because you're indoors, for crying out loud. That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, the ego loves it, and there's an opportunity to do some more damage on the inside.
Or you make a mistake, and you practice forgiveness, and you go, ah, that was great. That was really healing. Then you make a mistake and go, oh, it's okay, I can just forgive myself, it'll be great. Then the forgiveness turns into ego. You know what I mean? You can use it as a, it's a different kind of forgiveness. It's a different twist on it. Turns it into guilt.
There's the world's forgiveness is what's being played there, which skips the miracle entirely. Right. It just tries to take away the pain. You did a horrible thing, you were sloppy and foolish, and it cost real money, but that's okay, because you're lovable.
When you turn the spiritual tool into a different kind of a tool.
That's the spiritual bypass.
Yeah.
Spiritual bypass.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all, also known as a lie. Because really, you still believe you were bad and you did something wrong. You're still holding yourself to be guilty, but you're saying... I'm guilty, okay, but I'm not going to punish myself because God loves me.
It's okay.
So does my mommy.
It's okay to be guilty.
What's that?
It's okay to be guilty.
It's okay to be guilty because God loves me and I'm perfect just the way I am.
As opposed to...
But I may wreck somebody's house if you let me loose in it and cause some serious damage to them. That's still, if that's still in place, then we're actually lying with the forgiveness. Because we're stuffing the guilt somewhere on a shelf, saying, you've hurt somebody. Or somebody comes to your house and does that, and you forgive them. Mm-hmm. And you're so upset that you lost that vase, you're so upset your life is forever changed because it's irreplaceable. They did it. I'm going to forgive them for doing it, but I've been hurt. Your forgiveness is a lie now. It's all internal. You really do want them to, don't worry about it, I shouldn't have put it so close to the edge. It's all on me. It's all on me. It's all on me. I'm the guilty one that you broke my vase. I'm going to forgive you, I'm going to forgive, everything's fine. You see, the Course in Miracles is catching us right there at this spiritual bypass. The spiritual ego is trying to make the world a better place, keeping the world dangerous and you vulnerable. That's the ego, that's what we're here to heal.
Once we're aware of this path that we're on, the gig is up, and we're so sensitive to it, it can't...
You can't
stay on that road for very long.
You mean
long.
You bust your ego on a regular basis?
Pretty much.
That's what I want to hear. Yes.
There's one other thing about mistake that you don't realize that when I make a mistake or anybody makes a mistake, there's no witness. No one else can witness what happens here. It's like that separation. We're separated. I only know the mistake. No one else is even privy to it. It's totally unique with no witnesses whatsoever. And we a lot of times think that these people are seeing our mistakes. But they see it's not the same mistake we're seeing.
It's so exactly. true, isn't it?
Exactly.
It is so true. That's one of those first several lessons in the workbook. Really bust the ego. Nothing I see means anything. I give everything all I see, you know, the meaning it has for me. Exactly. You know, and I see nothing as it is now, which means you saw nothing as it is then either. So all this guilt you're holding on to was all a fantasy of what happened and how much it meant, and you didn't know. And you carrying some false idea of what happened. Oh my God, wake up.
Yeah, you know, it's like when I see it that way, I go, oh, what am I doing? Yeah, it's like no one has, it's just some crap I made up in my head.
It's crap I made up in my head. Yep, less than 10.
It's crap I made up in my head.
Yep. My mind?
That'd be a good name for this book.
It's, yeah. it's one of the lessons. It's been reworded a bit.
The crap I made up in my head. Yeah. Course in Miracles, the crap I made up in my head. I like that. Yeah.
Yep.
Yes. Yes, that's one of the early lessons. It's been reworded, though. Yeah, they put softer words around it.
Yeah.
It says, my mind is preoccupied with past thoughts. It's crap that I made up in my head. Yeah. Definitely. Nice. Yes. Pam.
Which question? Where are we at?
Yeah, well, you...
I'm sorry.
Do you remember? Will I come back to you?
Yeah. I was thinking about the opposite, and we're not there yet. Sorry.
We're there now.
Are we?
What is the opposite of a mistake? How far can you go with that question?
Okay,
we'll start with him.
Mastery.
Mastery is the opposite of a mistake. Dare we say grace?
Exactly.
Those are mastery mistakes.
Really
good. But no, where I was right before that was that all I wanted to say there was my favorite, I think my most recalled line from this book is, I do not know what anything is for. So when things are going sideways, it's just like, well, it is what it is. Yes. And anyway, that's all I wanted to say. But then to move on, I think that the opposite of mistake is mastery. And grace is right there.
Love it. Love it. You ready for that, Jeff? What's the opposite of mistake?
Yeah, it's still circling for me. I mean, I don't really think of it as that mastery doesn't really say it for me. It's that mistakes feel unconscious to me.
Okay.
So the opposite of mistake.
Yeah.
I guess you could call it consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to master it. You're not going to do it right every time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, but at least you're aware of the effect you have on other people and the situation.
Look, if it was fully conscious, you'd hit the right pedal. If you're fully conscious of what was going on, it wouldn't be a mistake to talk about. Yeah.
Like most of my mistakes happen when my mind is off somewhere else, you know, and I'm doing something I shouldn't.
So you're a little out of control?
Most of the time.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. David, what's the opposite of a mistake?
Well, I do like his interpretation, but...
You can take it?
I kind of saw it with two things. One was like, well, peace, happiness, love, all this, with opposite. But when I look at a mistake, it's... an illusion. So in a way, it's not even
Masako described a mistake can be a source of happiness that can feed you for the rest of your life once you correct it.
Yeah.
It's the end of unhappiness. Sometimes.
Yeah. To me, it's an opportunity. The opposite would be the opportunity to correct it.
Yeah. So the opposite of a mistake is the correction of a mistake.
And I think
fixing it.
It's my quiver, what your perception is. Oh, horrible mistake I made. Or you can go, oh... Fixing time.
Right? Mistake is breaking it, and the opposite mistake is fixing it.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, that's kind of...
Yeah. New girl from Canada.
Wow. Okay. This is like the philosophy class I dropped in first grade. Like, oh my God.
No doubt.
The opposite of a mistake in a very literal sense.
Yeah.
In my mind is just a correct action or choice. Correct action or choice. Uh-oh. I'm being judged by ego. You're in the right place.
A correct a
course of action or choice
that was executed without mistake. It was perfectly done.
Exactly.
It was
mastery.
It was graceful, masterful execution of exactly what was intended.
Yes.
Perfection, even?
Perfection. Yeah, perfection came to mind.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, yeah, you're okay. You're done.
For now.
Kim. What's the opposite of a mistake?
I was thinking it's not feeling guilty. Is the opposite of a mistake.
Oh. I
was working the Art and Wine this weekend at a barricade, and there were a lot of people walking around, and there was a young girl, and she was talking to her friend, and she tripped on the curb, and she fell, and she didn't get hurt, but there were a whole bunch of people there, and I turned around and I said something like, "I bet you're wondering if everybody saw that, right?" And then everybody started laughing, because we all said, yeah, we all did that. Well, she made a mistake that was embarrassing for her, but none of us felt embarrassed, because we've all done that before.
Yes.
And so I think it would, for me, I was just thinking, I'm so much more critical of myself than I am of anybody else, even if...
Yes.
Unless, I mean, even if somebody shows really bad behavior, I can be very objective and go, wow, they're really having a bad day. Mm-hmm. Unless it's an individual that I have a resentment against, then they can't do anything right. And I am constantly making mistakes, whether I say anything or not, because it's all in my own mind.
Yes, isn't that interesting?
It hurts me.
Selective. Yeah, let's take a pause now and visit part of the meditation. Remember we talked about in the meditation... is, you know, what it feel like for you, what happens to your body when you make a mistake, what happens to your body, what feels like, right? But I think the more interesting question is, what happens to you and your body when you witness somebody else making a mistake? Anybody want to speak to that?
Yeah, I will. Well, for me, it's not so different than what happens for me, and that's that there's a little cringing, a little, like, I'm just talking about the reactive part.
Yes, yes.
So the reactive part cringes, or like, oh, I'm responsible for what they did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, then there's the other side of it, I think, which is the other question. But
there's a reaction, there's sympathetic neurons, right? There's a compassion for the problem they just took on.
Yeah.
Mm. And I felt it. Even though I'm not involved, and I wasn't the one that tripped, and, mm-hmm. but I felt it. Mm-hmm. Isn't that personal? Isn't that so personal? Yeah. What else do you feel when somebody else goes through a mistake? Anything happen to you? What happens to you when somebody else makes a mistake? Anything happen to you? You want to talk about
it? I think it brings out a certain level of understanding, and you want to go and reassure them that they're not bad, or
diffuse the guilt.
Silly, or mm-hmm. diffuse the guilt. Yeah,
or the embarrassment
for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you that they don't have to carry that themselves. Because you already know what you're going to carry if you judge yourself for your own mistake.
Yes,
and they don't need to carry that if they don't have to.
You don't want.
Yeah, it's in a perfect world.
Oh yes,
in a perfect world, but nobody here is perfect.
Yeah,
you know, none of us are going to feel a little bit of Schadenfreude.
Yep.
And, I mean, let's get real.
No, uh-huh. But it doesn't... It may not happen all the time, but that's happened for me many times, though. So.
Yes.
Sure.
So.
Yes. You know, what comes to my mind is, I want to make nothing of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that can be release a thing, too.
Release that burden quickly, the sooner the better, because I know when I carry the guilt or the worry, it just gets worse the more I carry it. Let's just cut that off at the butt. I would do it for you as fast as I could. For me, sometimes I take a little longer.
So, but isn't that kind of activating the ego? Like, you're there to rescue this poor soul that, you know, if
you're
it happened
so special.
To you, you'd feel like crap, and it churns your stomach, and you're doing this whole dance in your head around it, whereas... if you could really just be there, it wouldn't be a big deal anyway. It just would be something that happened without any kind of need for rescue. I'm a rescuer, and I see that can be such a head trip.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A big problem with a rescuer, it happens with us when we go in the hospital bed, you know, the cancer ward, and or somebody's injured, and we try to be compassionate and say, boy, I know how bad this is and how bad you feel, and I understand this is really serious. It could really change your life, and it could make, you know, things really hard for you, and I know. Sucks to be you. I'm going to go play golf, okay? But I'll be thinking about you while I'm... Yeah, there is a real cost to that. And it seems compassionate as we share in somebody's problem, but of course Miracles is saying, well, that means you're actually making it real. Who knows what they think, but yes, you're really making it real for you. How bad that is, you're really making it real for you, for sure. Mm-hmm. They may say, you know what, she's just trying to be nice, I don't care. I'm going to get better. Wait till she sees. But they can't talk because of the bandage on their face. But for you, seeing them in trouble, you are making the trouble real for them. This is the poison of the compassionate ego. Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. But what Kim... That's not what Kim's talking about, I think. And that's not what... Glenn is talking about either. Glenn says, I know. I can feel it. I know my brother. I know myself. And when these things happen, I wish somebody was there for me to help me cut off the pity, cut off the guilt, cut off the shame, and laugh, make me laugh instead of cry. The sooner, the better. Right, Kim? Mm-hmm. That's what you did for that woman. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is the ability. That's why I call that want. Kim says, I want to do this. Maybe it's too awkward and she can't, but the point is you. Of Course in Miracles is always about you, not what you do with somebody else. It's always about you and your mind. Always, always, always. That's why I caught her with the four-letter word, which is a beautiful four-letter word. Want. In a moment like that, I want to help. I want them not to feel pain. Doesn't that kind of remind you of a little bit like love? I want you not to hurt.
So if someone's... you're feeling sorry for somebody.
Yes.
You're making it real. And you're making yourself better than them.
That's it.
It's better to change the whole subject.
And that's the opposite. When you're feeling sorry for them, you're actually committing them to the problem. Mm-hmm. Oh, I feel so sorry for you. That's horrible. And I know that you know you shouldn't have done that. And you'll never do it again, right? Like ever? For sure, right? Okay. Oh, it's the wrong direction, right? You can feel it. You can feel the contraction, right? Versus what Kim said and Glenn said, is that, hey, back up you go. Let me just grab you before you fall. Take not, page 494, right? Take not one step in the descent to hell. For having taken one step, you will not recognize it for what it is, nor the ones that follow, comma, and they will follow.
Seems like what you'd be doing that for yourself rather than for the other person. Like
always.
Like you see somebody trip and you go over there and say, oh, you know, I want to help you. But it might not bother them. You're assuming that that it bothers them.
This is true.
And you're identifying with that as if it was happening to you.
Yes, yes.
And how you would feel.
Yes.
Without regard for how they feel.
Yep, you could be dead wrong. But it doesn't change the effect on you, which is turned out to form self-love.
Yeah.
You're barely, and next time it happens to you, you won't go that far. Yes.
And to further this, it's like if you consider a child freaking out over something, do you go...
Here we go.
If you know, are you going to get down on... Are you going to join them in their tantrum or going to relieve the fact that you don't get to use that spoon right now, you get to use this spoon right now or whatever? And so you're either feeding the fire or you're... putting it out,
very
right?
Good. There it is. That's the bottom line.
So in that context of an adult and a little baby, you know, and a kid, it's like, do you join it or do you relieve the pressure?
And you know where you are when you're doing it.
I'm also saying this because it's a newbie over here.
Yeah.
Because it's confusing. That there's a subtle difference in this language around like egoic help
Yes.
You know, or
yes.
Perception or whatever.
Yes.
Versus genuine love, really.
Just right. Right, isn't it dramatically different? We need a little guidance to find out what the difference really is because of our training. It's so compassionate to go in and share the problem. But turns out that sharing the problem makes the problem bigger. That would be called endarkenment.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh.
To become enlightened. You girl?
Just a question. Okay, so I'm just trying to wrap my head around. In the scenario that you presented where you're visiting someone who's ill.
Yes.
And you feel sorry for them. Mm-hmm. So how... I'm just confused. How would you proceed in that scenario? What would be the correct path?
The correct path is to no longer see them as an injured, losing individual.
Okay. Body.
We spend a lot of time with this material.
Yeah, I know. So
going toward the spiritual side of things.
Yeah.
The physical side of things is it sucks to be that person for sure. Right?
Yeah.
Easy to do the math there, right?
Yeah.
It turns out we're not bodies. Mm-hmm. Our true identity doesn't fit in a body. Mm-hmm. Turns out. Mm-hmm. And so to touch that reality, to actually live in that space just for a few seconds is all it takes. You can never be the same. Mm-hmm. We just try to get a few of those seconds in this life. Mm-hmm. But you'll never be the same. And now you see others also as this now, if you want, enlightened mm-hmm. or enlarged mm-hmm. or redefined or identified with spirit instead of that body, which, by the way, is they're all going to die. Mine too. Jesus died. It wasn't pretty.
I've heard about that.
And so they all died. But there is another reality which is actually capitalized. Mm-hmm. That's what we pick up by studying things like spiritual works like mm-hmm. this, is to come with that new identity. Once you have that, you become a light now. Mm-hmm. That room can be very dark. Mm-hmm. This hospital room?
Yeah.
Very dark. But when you've got a little bit of enlightenment going on, and it talks about it, and there's a chapter that as you get your game on, lightness about you becomes. And you're like a light in the dark.
Okay.
Without saying a thing. You know why? Because your forehead's smooth. Mm-hmm. And your consciousness is beyond that suffering, dying, injured body.
Yeah.
And it's contagious. Mm-hmm. The person says, I'm really glad you came to see me today. Mm-hmm. And they can't speak of it.
It's more of an energy that you're putting out rather than a...
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. And you'll come out, you will come out high as a kite. Mm-hmm. For not having gone down the rabbit hole. Who knows what it does to the person in the bed? Usually it's really good. But if you've done this, you will recognize your own strength. Part of Course in Miracles is that. Is to help you see you. To help you come in touch with the Christ mind that is in you. But you know what? In order to come in touch with the Christ mind that's in you, the easiest way is to put you in front of a little trouble, or a lot. And that's where a miracle is found, in times of trouble. Yes.
And okay. How often it says in the book that that's in relationship with another human being, which is really the juiciest part.
Yes. Yes. In relationship. Okay. It doesn't even have to be qualified as with a human being. Turns out those are the juiciest. Those are the most accelerated experiences. Those are the ones that accelerate the experience of love or of hate.
Where it opens up, where you may have been kind of just going along with the dream.
Fertile ground for miracles in relationship. Yes. One more comment on relationship is... Is a relationship, can it also be described as an intentional or even unavoidable giving and receiving?
Yeah. Where there's no, you can't really define it as giving or receiving because it happens simultaneously somehow.
Because the relationship exists as an experience of giving and receiving. If you cannot give, nor can you receive at all, even in your own wishes or mind, there's no relationship. Like, for example, the crankshaft in my motorcycle, in my shed at home. Sorry, you guys have never seen it. Half of you don't know what a crankshaft is. It's just no relationship. But lots of things where you immediately, even though it's an object, you can connect to, and there's a giving and receiving happening in your own mind about your favorite pillow at home. Is it still there? Was it available tonight to sleep, or is it like at the laundry or somebody borrow it? There's a relationship there, and you feel it, you experience it, it means something to you. And of course, people are a whole other dimension of that. Relationship. Big topic. We'll never put it down in this book. Misako.
Two things. One is that when I sort of wake up, become present to someone who is a call for help, there's a shift that happens when I see that choice. And then the wonderful thing for me is that being present, I don't really know what that person needs until I'm with them. Mm-hmm. And then something happens because I am being mindful, mm-hmm. and also the recognition that it's the oneness.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I just love the mystery, yes. of just trusting something is going to flow through me.
Yes.
It's going to pass through me. And it's a surprise for me.
Yes. This is part of having a budget to afford to step back and let this mysterious other intelligence speak. It can only happen when you're quiet. If you're busy thinking what you're going to say or worrying about or preparing how to phrase, that's the ego, and the Holy Spirit is going to sit back quietly and say, well, when you give me a chance, maybe I'll whisper a few things. But not in a hurry. So to get a bigger budget, to be able to have that flow through you, requires, God, I have to count it out. Is it five letters?
It has to be faithfulness or trust.
Trust. Is that four letters? Trust a four letter? Is trust a four letter? Is it a five-letter word? T-R-U-S-T. All right, so the five-letter word. I thought, we get another four-letter word to play with here. Uh-huh. No, it's a five-letter word. It requires trust. It requires trust. Both, especially a critical situation, you know, right at the hospital bed, or right at work, or right with your loved one. Or it's a pretty tense moment there a little bit. Trust means you can afford to step back and let some quietness lead the way. Oh, amazing things happen, right? Everybody's been there. Miracles flow. Holy Spirit, what we call it. The Holy Spirit instead of the unholy spirit. The unholy spirit's writing down notes in the car before you go into the hospital. And here's what I need to say. I got to remember to say this because this will sound good. I saw it in a card down the gift shop. Great. Okay, Marcia, what is the opposite of a mistake?
For me, it's coming from love, because then there's no regret.
Ooh.
For me, mistakes are things that I revisit with guilt over and over and over. And if I'm coming from love, there is nothing to regret or feel guilty about.
That's beautiful. Coming from love. Love heals everything. Love is a relationship that heals everything instantly. There's not even a gap. Isn't it? Mistake is, it's broken. A love is, what do even broken mean? I don't even get that word. I don't even have that word. I have a broom. Let's go do this together. That's pretty sweet. Thank you. Julie, what's the opposite of a mistake?
I'm a little bit with Kim on lack of guilt, but I didn't really, no word occurred to me. I actually just felt a lot of peace. So I'm going to go with peace.
Absolutely. Boy, isn't that part of the opposite of peace happens. The anxiety happens, the guilt, the what happens next, or I'm a fool, or whatever. All that's energy around noticing the mistake.
Busy mind.
It's the opposite of peace. Mm-hmm. There's no room for peace. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful. Well, what's the opposite of a mistake?
Well, so much has already been said. So my first thought was that, you know, the instant you think mistake and then try to, you know, think of an opposite, then you're trapped. So you can't think about it. Mm. If you think about it, you know, and you think about the opposite, and that's spiritually go. So just the concept of mistake, you're done. There's no, you can't get out of that box you put yourself in.
So maybe you're saying to me that the opposite of mistake would have to be mistakelessness. You don't go there. You can't go there because it's completely unreal. Then you can actually visit the opposite of a mistake. But if the mistake exists at all, in even a fractional, wishful, theoretical, fantastical way, you're done.
Just by acknowledging the fact of a possibility of a mistake.
Yes.
Means you're all done. Forget it.
Yes. And that is true in this book about guilt, about attack, about vulnerability, about ego. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's why it adds. It has several times where it comes up with lessness, mm-hmm. about defense and being in it. Mm-hmm. Lessness means that it doesn't even exist mm-hmm. to be yeah. described or talked about.
Yeah, I have to remember that I'm the only one that sees the mistake. God sees no mistakes.
Ha!
And that I create my own guilt and my own shame and my own everything from my judgment of that being a mistake.
Yes.
Rather than just.
Yes.
A footstep on my path.
Isn't that part of enlightenment to get the higher perspective of what's going on?
If only we could stay there. But yes.
But when we visit there, doesn't it kind of make things better? Mm-hmm. To get the bigger picture, like the parent and the child. The parent's got a bigger picture of what's going on. The kid is so sucked into that little problem. Mm-hmm. Let me show you how this works, kid. It's not as bad as you think. That's mm-hmm. enlightenment. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Mark, what's the opposite? It's
kind of like following up what Walt said. You know, things happen, like in the physical world, and things happen in reality, and there isn't, they don't mean anything. And so the minute you start giving something meaning, like saying something is a mistake,
yes,
then that's making it mean something, and then you can feel a certain way about it. Yeah. So there's actually no feeling attached to something that happens.
Yeah.
It just happens.
Yeah. Another way to look at what you're describing, beautiful, thank you, beautiful, because it reminds me of one of my favorite two words that came out of a mathematical philosopher I've mentioned before. He's really into math, you know, but he's got it. He got it through math. He got his awakening. And beautiful what you're describing. He says, but you can't have a mistake because things just happen. And if you look at how they happened, they had to happen. That's why they happened. So you're fooling yourself.
Well, even saying that it has to happen is describing meaning. It just happened.
Yeah, but it didn't happen because it wasn't supposed to happen. It happened because your elbow hit it. That's why it happened. Why'd your elbow hit it? Because your elbow was there. Why was your elbow there? Because you were there. Why were you there? Because you were walking down the hall too close to it. And I'll show you the math of from all the way back to the day you were born. He says, there aren't any mistakes, this guy. Just give it up. Well, the Buddhists have this too. Causes and conditions, they call it. Hmm. It's the teaching of causes and conditions. And when you understand this embrace of how obvious everything is, it can't be otherwise, you could just relax. And Anthony DeMello weighs in now. He says, his two words are three words. You guys count. Trust the inevitable. It happens. Mm-hmm. The sooner you can accept and trust what happens, the freer you are. He calls it enlightenment.
Mm, that's huge.
Isn't it huge? So few words.
The sooner you can trust in whatever it is, because
vases and tantrums, but break it all back down, even being in a body. Even the whole trip.
The whole trip?
The whole trip.
Right? Small and large, start to finish. What hasn't happened yet, what already happened, is all the same, right?
It's like a bad acid trip. You can't fight it.
It's lesson, it's miracle principle.
Jeff's like, wait a minute.
Miracle principle number one. Miracle principle number one.
There is no order of difficulties in miracles.
There's no order of difficulties in miracles. One is not harder or easier. They're all the same. In fact, all expressions of love are maximal. What do you bring love into when we're trying to solve a problem? That's because, little kid, you don't see what's going on. But, so, in comes my favorite two words from this guy. Divine indifference. Thank you.
Dispassionate,
because nothing actually happened wrong.
It's like these guys,
it happened, yeah. Awesome.
You meet, like, these guys like, you know, somebody like Eckhart Tolle or, you know, people that I've seen that have this sense of dispassion about them.
Yes.
You know, somebody will say something to them like, oh, this thing happened and it was horrible, and they just kind of stare at the person. It's like, you know, they're waiting for, they're not waiting for anything. It's like the other person's having their drama.
They're having their drama. That's also what a mystic is. A mystic is one who can see through. Yeah. It's not that they're special, not that they're magical. It's just that they can see through. Like, a mechanic is a mystic. When you pull up a car, they hear that knocking sound, they say, oh, that's your fuel pump. Right. How do you know? I haven't even seen your car yet. I heard you pull up, and I know it's a 1990 to 2000 Toyota. They all make that noise.
You used to listen to Click and Clack, didn't you?
Yeah, right. Yes. They're mystics.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Very good. Thank you. Divine indifference, it just happens. There's so much freedom there.
I really like where you're going with, like, just not being so hard on ourselves, you know? Yeah. It's like, mistakes happen. I've been sitting there thinking about my mistakes, and it's like, my original thought was they're, like, unconscious, you know, you're just... Mm-hmm. But a lot of my mistakes, I put a lot of thought into that.
Sometimes for years.
I've spent effort on it.
Yeah. And you got good at it.
And I fucked it up anyway.
But
then I start beating yourself up, and that's where it breaks down, right?
Yes,
there.
Yes, yes.
That's where it breaks
down. It's not free.
Down.
That's not
like
free.
It's like, I tried, I did my best, whatever. It did not work out.
Mm-hmm. That happens.
But then the beating yourself up is where it starts to go south.
So
as you get older,
so
it gets easier to laugh at it.
Because it's not like feeling bad isn't enough. Feeling bad sucks, and then you feel bad about feeling bad.
Yeah. And then a new level of loss is introduced. New level of loss as you beat yourself up. Right, Chris?
Yeah. I've heard stories about people who have some sort of speech impediment. And the thing that keeps the speech impediment in place is the judgment that they have on themselves for doing that. And when they realize they're doing that, then that speech impediment stops.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's a little cycle of judgment. I've heard this too. Little cycle of judgment that stops the easy pronunciation.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah. Very good. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
In other words, stop making it real.
Yeah. Well, you stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
You just do it.
Just
they're thinking about it too much.
Right. Yeah.
Masako, what's the opposite of a mistake?
Let me just go back and say that, a mistake is an illusion. It really never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to get back into the cause, which is a shift in our perception.
Mm-hmm.
Because we could deal with mistakes, all the effects in the world, and it's like, some of these dogs, I don't think they're very bright, but they chase their own tail.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the opposite of mistake, for me, it's wholeness, it's completion.
Nice.
It's that simple.
Nice. Yeah. Because a mistake proves that something can be broken, can be missing its appropriate state. But wholeness, real and completion means done deal. Nice. Donna, what's the opposite of a mistake?
Well,
Well, boy, we're really rolling back the clock now to a little while ago in the room, but I know, you know, this was kind of coming out of the feeling I was having of taking on the mistake, but I thought, well, for me, the opposite of mistake is freedom, and freedom that from thinking there is such a thing as one, as a reality that's fixed. And so when I'm free of that reality that's fixed, then everything that's real can happen.
Yes.
And grow.
Bravo. Yeah, beautiful. I love it. The mistake, the acknowledgement of a mistake, like Walt was talking about, the minute you acknowledge a mistake, you're not free. You're actually in mistake land.
And that word "stake" is in there, like a personal mistake.
A stake in the heart.
Done a lot of that. So,
so true, isn't it? It's the opposite. It's not being present, is it? To have a mistake means that I'm in the past thinking about what happened, in the future about the consequences. Walt says you can't be in that space. You're completely poisoned. It's not free. Which is why I love what Bruce said, because Bruce said is like, well, let's do the math here. Things happen all the time. You're gonna call it a mistake? I mean, what does that even mean? And the Buddhists say, well, it's just revealed. The causes and conditions that were always present have revealed themselves. Big parka in a narrow hallway around a Ming vase equals ceramic on the floor. Good. Not free. So free is the opposite of mistake. Beautiful. Yeah. Chris, what's the opposite of mistake?
Well, mistake is a clenching in my throat and a tightness in my head and my stomach completely compressing. And the opposite is the unclenching, the space in my body, the spaciousness in how I relate to the world.
Beautifully described from a tactile, feeling, experiential perspective. Well, you were here for the... We had a whole night on that. Mm-hmm. We did a meditation on grace. What does it feel like to do the perfect execution? Were you a gymnast or a sports person ever in your life, or a musician?
An artist.
Cook, make a perfect cake, or...
Painter.
And you just pulled off the colors, balance of some sort. So, small David, under tall David, I should call him.
Under tall.
What if he's listening? Sorry, David.
Hi, David.
Hi, David. Under tall David, he had the great. He got me when he said, "Grace is like a snow skier in his zone."
Yeah.
And he flows from left turn to right turn, and you can't tell which way he's going. His skis are going left, but his head's going right. He just, it's so beautiful.
You can feel the mountain and the air is, oh my God.
Oh, anticipating. Some rock shows up and he just moves right around it. It's just so graceful. It's so non-contracted. Like you were putting your hands in your body, showing contraction. It's a flow. Beautiful. That's grace. Nice. Glenn, what's grace? I mean, what's the opposite of a mistake? I love grace.
Everything
that
everyone has said has been really blessing. The word that came up for me was innocence. So just, and I think that's reflected in everything here.
Yeah.
The other one that came up was non-judgment. So there's no real thought process.
Yeah.
And that's what, like, the athlete or the dancer, or the, where that harmony, I think, just kind of flows, like you were saying. So there's something else. Yeah. Holy Spirit is working through you.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, that came up in our grace discussion. And anybody who's with, please go on the spiritualear.org. Live meetings, go back a few weeks to Grace and listen in. That was so fun, wasn't it?
Yes.
So we did, one of the things that came up was when you're playing a musical instrument, you can't actually, it's very rare you pull off all the notes perfectly. You'll miss strum or whatever. But if you're a master, if you're graceful, you'll just hold that note a little longer and you'll work it into the chorus and you'll play it that way for the rest of the song. And guess what? You've got a rendition that's touching.
Totally new.
Adapting.
At that moment, it's different than
no judgment, not hanging up, going with it. Going with it and keeping it and working with it. Not rejecting and stopping the song. Let me start over. No, that's not graceful, is it? Yeah, yeah. Good, beautiful. Cecilia.
Oh, well, I went through a lot thinking about that. But I think there's, like, different levels of mistakes.
Definitely.
But, I mean, I think the opposite would be freedom, because then it's freedom to be all that you can be. Right?
Nice.
Because if the moment you judge something, then you kind of hamper it a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But the opposite would be what you said, which is freedom to be.
Yeah.
You know, and also I think on a practical sense, you know, time, the present, and the past, and all that, it's all one.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you think you made a mistake, that's your judgment, you can always make it right.
Right?
You know? And it's all... But if you make it right, it's going to be all right. Because it's in the, you know, it's all it's circular.
Yes. The prisoner and the prison guard are the same.
Mm-hmm.
The one who would be held down by this judgment and the one who can relieve the judgment, turns out, is you and your mind. You can make it all right. And you have. This is why you speak with such confidence. You have freed yourself. Lesson 23. Lesson 23 may be stuck when Cecilia did it. And she said, I could escape the world I see by giving up attack thoughts. Nifty little lesson, isn't it? Fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't think right now. But that's probably...
You know, I learned this lesson big time. For me, I had this particular awakening when I took on a very difficult, complex project. And I... this was 20 years ago, I guess, now. But I decided, and I did this, that I would make my own car. And I actually made my own car.
Mm-hmm.
And I made it the size of fit in the back of my pickup. It's four-wheel drive. It has 5 forward speeds and 5 reverse. It's rack and pinion steering. It's got disc brakes, on and on and on. Now, I had a marketing job at the time, and I'd like to fill some of the time. You know, so I would sketch all of these complex parts during the marketing meetings, you know, keep myself occupied. And Andrew takes great notes. Make sure he attends the next meeting, because you know he's gonna capture everything said. No, I'm not trying to design how a swing arm can pivot and not over tighten the chain. That's what I'm really doing. But I'll tell you, a big surprise came out of that. When I would work on that thing, and I would be welding some part, you know, and making like the swing arm, for example, for the, you know. There was no wrong, because I was making it up. The whole thing, the whole car. Little single seat thing. Mm-hmm. And you can't make a mistake when you're making it up. Who's to say, Andrew, you really should have made the swing arm longer, say. That's wise. You really messed that up.
The creative have nothing to learn?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you. So Course in Miracles quote, the truly creative have nothing to learn. You bet. I was so free.
Mm-hmm.
I was so free because I couldn't make a mistake. Things would go not right and they wouldn't work. But that's how I knew.
That was the process.
Yeah. It's a process. Mm-hmm. I was free to go through the process without judgment. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. That was a really, really, really big lesson for me.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. Good feeling. John, what's the opposite of a mistake?
Well, I always like to have a one-word answer.
Yeah.
to these little round tables. And I hope nobody ever chooses my word.
All right, start with you next time.
I think the opposite of mistake is intentionality. Because if you are intentional about anything, you cannot have a mistake.
Ha.
It's the opposite.
Nice.
And
nice.
So you might be mistaken overall, but that doesn't matter.
I like that. You might be mistaken overall, but the opposite of that process is intentionality.
But you're making it up anyway, right, as you go along.
Yeah, I knew what I was doing while I was doing it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's good.
Well, it's like the basketball player goes up and misses the shot, so he's on to the next play, but he's in that zone. He's not leaving the zone for whatever happens.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm like circling back to everything I'm layering up here, and it's like, you can have intentionality, you can have all these great ideas, but mistakes still happen.
Yes.
So for me, it's coming back to, like, if you're doing your best, uh-huh, you're honestly making your best, taking your best shot.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And but then that really implies, you know, what does it mean to do your best? Because, I mean,
I think Mark can answer that right now.
Yeah.
Please. You want to weigh in on this, Mark?
Yes.
What does it mean to do your best?
Is anybody ever not doing their absolute best based on what you said?
Maybe.
I take the shortcuts sometimes, and the shortcuts lead to mistakes, and then you have pain.
You got this?
Well, what's coming to mind is something you've said in the past, that if you're supposed to do something one way 99% of the time, but 1% of the time you're supposed to do something else, mm-hmm, it's you're never going to get it right, there's too much consequences. It's about being 100% committed.
Yes.
And so my answer would be that it goes back to the illusion. It's not about you doing your best, because even if you mess up in this worldly terms, like, that is unfolding for a reason, and your lesson is to just release. Awesome. And 100% of the time, not 99.9.
Yes. And for all the right reasons.
You would release. To be honest.
You would not release in order to make your life better. That's a lie. Because your life sucks because these things happen, and I'm just going to try to ignore them. I'm just going to let it go. That is an ego trap.
And it's not honest.
And it's not honest. Mm-hmm. Very good. Now, on the other hand, if you're releasing because you are aware that this illusion is designed to trip you up, mm-hmm, you're going to have to change your identity from being this poor, victim-y human being with so many quarts of blood and water keeping on the inside. You're going to have to let go of that whole scenario and move up a level of identity to a spiritual reality. Now you can let go of the physical, not because it makes your life better, not because of what you should have done, or because you read it. No. You let it go because it's untrue.
It's what?
Untrue.
Oh.
It's untrue. It's very true for the body, okay? Let's not forget about it. It's very untrue above the battleground. It's very untrue from a high enough perspective to embrace all the pieces as whole. Who said wholeness? Is that Misako? Wholeness and completeness, she said. Well, that kind of dissolves the ability for there to be differences that are guilty of taking one thing from another. A broken vase and a whole vase is still a complete, it's still a vase, because the vase doesn't exist in form, it exists in a concept that it's, you move away from the particular, see. Part of enlightenment is that. Yes.
I was just like with a speaker the other day, and he said that if you imagine taking a snapshot of your life and then making it into a puzzle.
Yes.
And you're looking at the completed puzzle, but you're like, oh, I don't really like this one piece here when I lost that, necklace, or I don't really like this part here where I said that rude thing. Suddenly you're not looking at a complete picture. It's no longer your full life. And so it's to take all of those moments in and just like the allowing, I guess. And I think that I don't know, to me that applies in this in this conversation.
It's like trusting the inevitable.
Yeah.
Oh, piece missing. Well, that was coming. Mm-hmm. And when you look back at things happen, the causes and conditions of the Buddhist Zen world, it happened because it was happening. It was always happening. And now you're just seeing it manifest. It's a great way to be free. Asako.
I really like what John said, because the definition of being intentional is to, it's sort of like being mindful. No, mm-hmm. that's not, I'm sorry. You have an intention mm-hmm. with something, mm-hmm. and the other piece is you let it go. Mm-hmm. So a lot of faith and a lot of trust is involved in
that. No, I like what he said too, because yeah. there's a knowingness of your intention.
Right.
You're not a victim yeah. to your own acts. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a mistake. You can't have a mistake if you're not a victim. It's beautiful. I love it.
The trap, though, is that as human beings, we always like have a tendency to be like the rat going down the maze, to thinking that at the end of that tunnel, we're going to find that same piece of cheese.
Yes.
And if you keep thinking in terms of making mistakes, then you keep going down that same tunnel, thinking that if you just do it right this time, then you'll find mm-hmm. that cheese.
Door A versus door B, right, Julie?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, but if you let go of that whole concept, then you have more freedom to you know, change tunnels.
Or enjoy your life.
Yes.
I think that's the a piece that goes along with living your life intentionally.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, because you let it go, and then you can be in life.
Because who says all you get is a piece of cheese?
Yeah,
that's right.
The second mouse gets the cheese?
Well, that's all I ever eat.
Yeah, mine was creation. The opposite of mistake, where everything is kind of degrading, falling apart, non-intentional, is creation, where it's forming and intentional.
Mm-hmm. But, I like that.
Yeah.
Which is reminding me, thank you for reminding me of my experience at Camp Building that old car. Mm-hmm. I finally drove, I drove it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, let's turn to page 403 in the text. And New Girl, the book page number start over three times. This is the first time it says 403. 403, paragraph 6.
I just had a thought that creation is alive and a mistake is dead.
Wow!
Yes.
That's great!
Whoa, you can't off of your word there. Honey.
Yes. A mistake is dead and done and judged.
Yeah.
Creation is alive and happening. Nice. Thank you. Thank you. Beautiful.
You'd have a bumper sticker that says that.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff, you ready to rock it?
I'm sorry. What,
John, you want to rock it?
Take
news. Whenever you're ready. We're going to have him start.
What page?
403 in the text.
It can indeed be said the ego made its world on sin. Only in such a world could everything be upside down. This is the strange illusion that makes the clouds of guilt seem heavy and impenetrable. The solidness that this world's foundation seems to have is found in this. For sin has changed creation from an idea of God to an ideal the ego wants. A world it rules, made up of bodies, mindless and capable of complete corruption and decay. If this is a mistake, it can be undone easily by truth. Any mistake can be corrected if truth be left to judge it. But if the mistake is given the status of truth, to what can it be brought? The holiness of sin is kept in place by just this strange device. As truth, it is inviolate, and everything is brought to it for judgment. As a mistake, it must be brought to truth. It is impossible to have faith in sin, for sin is faithlessness. Yet it is possible to have faith that a mistake can be corrected.
Awesome! So much precision in that paragraph about a mistake and sin and the costs of believing that there are mistakes that are not forgivable.
So if you have a repetitive
response to something that feels like a mistake. You can have that intention that this mistake can be corrected.
Yes.
Because there you are, caught in it again.
Yes.
You're going to hold that intention. You're going to hold that intention.
This is what Cecilia was talking about. She says, you know, when you become free, mistakes happen again and again, but lesson 236 is written on her mirror and lipstick. She says, lesson 236 is, I rule my mind, which I alone must rule. I get what I think. She says, I can fix this. I can be free. If I choose, I can be free. If I choose, I can be attacked and losing. But I'm doing the choosing, says Cecilia. And this is my freedom. And that is the message of A Course in Miracles. Beautiful. Yes. All right, let's unpack a little bit of this. I know we have some time. It's just so much precision in this. It's crazy, isn't it? Watch this. Okay. Now, it can indeed be said, in paragraph 6, okay, it can indeed be said that the ego makes its world on sin. Okay? And sin is the unforgivable mistake. Sin means you've done something that for which you obviously deserve punishment or exclusion or separation. You deserve it. You're out. You're out of the fold. Sin. Yeah. Right? The Course says so many times there is no sin, but it knows that we believe there is. We feel that there is these mistakes that are so serious. And now, for us Course in Miracles students, we're so good about seeing our brothers as innocent, it's the inside judgment that we're talking about now. The sin really applies to what you think about yourself. Yeah. Okay? No. Only in such a world could everything be upside down. Where there are divisions that are unrepairable. Only in such a world could everything be upside down. Where time, you see, is real. And what time means is that things are happening beyond your control. And the train comes and the train goes. And if you don't get on it, you're out. That's what time essentially is. This, you are a victim to this constant march of something moving. And this is a missed opportunity unless you're ahead of time. It's completely upside down. When you get the awakening in this book, the whole concept of time is completely upside down, or inside out, if you will. In chapter 1, it starts talking about it right away and then backs off and says, this is a bit too much for you, who are so addicted to time, to understand that time and space are actually the same thing. What?
What?
How are you smoking? Who wrote this thing?
In California.
Yeah, believe me. Anyway, only in such a world, see, says the same author who wrote those crazy words in chapter 1, only in such a world could everything be upside down. See, this is the strange illusion that makes the clouds of guilt seem heavy and impenetrable. This idea of sin, see, makes clouds of guilt heavy. Because sin means you deserve punishment. It's the right thing to do, is to do the punishment. So you can atone. You got to pay penance so that maybe you have a chance to be loved again. That's so sick! Where's love? Where is love? Where's this whole idea of God in all that picture?
Forgiveness.
We need some forgiveness. You need a miracle and some forgiveness right away. Maybe start with a six-pack of that.
Not to mention.
But the book says, look, this kind of thinking is nutso, right? Listen to this. The solidness that this world's foundation seems to have is found on this idea. For sin has changed creation from an idea of God, with a capital I, an idea of God. That's like the divine approach. Idea of God, the knowing approach, right, the creator approach, to an ideal small I of, that the ego wants. A world that sin rules. made up of bodies, mindless and capable of complete corruption and decay. That's the world I've studied in science.
Interesting. I think I've said that about some people in Capitola.
Oh.
Mindless and capable of complete corruption. I'm sure I've said that. Yeah. Maybe not out loud, but...
Woo!
Talking about city council?
No. But.
Well, you know it when you see it, right, Kim?
Yes. Yeah. Woo! That couldn't be me.
It's a good little you. Yeah. So sweet.
Aren't I?
Yeah. If this is a mistake, big if, this is one of the things you have to take into meditation. Whenever you see the word if in A Course in Miracles, you should really stop. You're being invited to go into a meditation and see what you really think is true. It's such a gift every time you see that word. He's just saying, if you're into this, I got a gift for you. A miracle is about to happen at this point, if you're in that zone. Mistake, see? We're switching to mistake. If this is a mistake, it can be undone easily by truth, which is what Cecilia was saying. She says, I've got this truth thing going on now for a while, and I prefer it. And the truth is, I am empowered to experience my life following my thoughts. I think happy thoughts, I get happy life. I think fear thoughts, I get a fearful life. I know it, because I've been living it, she says. Mm-hmm. There is my victimhood. There's the prisoner, and the prison guard are actually the same. Mm-hmm. When you awaken. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it can be corrected by truth.
So this whole idea of correcting the mistake is the definition of a miracle, then.
Yes. High five from across the room. It wasn't that well said. Wasn't that well said. Absolutely. When that shift, that correcting the illusion is made, you're now free of it. So now when you forgive, when you don't get hard on yourself, it's not because you're trying to be nice, it's because it's perfectly merited. You've corrected in your mind, the illusion of a problem is relieved. So forgiveness is so quick, you don't even have to think about it. Because you've changed the reason for guilt. It's gone. When you do that for yourself, under something that matters to you, something happens. What happens, Julie, after the miracle is in place, changes how you perceive the darn thing in the first place, then the stinking thinking comes around, but you don't play into it and you just let it go. You release it. What happens after that? Anybody?
The holy instant.
The holy instant happens. Mm-hmm. It's a time out of time occurs. A raising up of your consciousness into a timeless moment. Because you're free. You're free by your own thought. You're in truth. You're in truth. Call it an instant because, like I say, when you take your line, your finger and you run it across the water, that line really is there, isn't it? But where we are now, the water closes it up very quickly. But you know the line was there. And that holy instant's a beautiful, powerful thing. Nobody can take away from you. Yeah, good. Thanks. Okay. Sentence 7 now. Any mistake can be corrected, just like Cecilia said. If, no chance to meditate, if truth be left to judge the mistake. I think those are beautiful words.
As opposed to jumping in and trying to judge it on your own.
If the ego is left to judge the mistake, ego's the not truth, ego's an illusion of self, it will probably decide the mistake was wrong, bad, and the best thing for everybody is you get punished for it. See? Then you won't do it again. It's a good idea. let's hold this mistake up for everybody to see, and you should get black and blue for it. You should pay a little extra. If the ego's left to judge a mistake, it'll try to make something good of it, in its terms. There's huge costs to the way the ego does things. Huge costs. We've made a whole world around it. It's sentence number one. Do you remember sentence number one in this paragraph? It can indeed be said that the ego made the world on sin. Yeah. Karma, right?
Yeah, that.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that little thing.
Where you're spinning your own wheel.
You're spinning your own wheel, you get what you deserve.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the law of karma, not just karma. That, my friends, is ego logic. The ego loves karma. You see, new girl, the reason why your life is the way it is because you deserve it. You've been really nice this life, but your past life, you were a real pill. And so you should just give up and just surrender to how horrible you were in the past life. Stuck with it. Ego loves that. You need to be so good in this life to make up for what you don't remember doing. You better get started. Are you late? Yeah.
Karma and the Catholic Church.
Oh, yeah, they go together nicely, huh? Yeah, that's smart. Yeah, east. I think Course in Miracle does agree with karma, but with a little difference. Maybe a big difference.
Yeah.
With Course in Miracles, the whole idea of karma is also true, but there's no past, see, in A Course in Miracles. But the idea of karma is still, it's because what you think right now, you got right now.
Mm-hmm.
This Course in Miracles take on karma. It is true, but it's true right now, starting and finishing now. There's no past. There's no future. And so you always experience your thoughts as your life. You recognize that? Every time you have a thought, you live it, even if you're denying it. It's because of Course in Miracles says it's true. There's only the present. Everything's happening. What?
The karma is just one aspect of the now. Infinite aspects of the now.
It's recognizing the truth of the now.
But there's no reason for it to be false.
Properly seen.
Yeah.
Good. Beautiful. Yes. Yes. But if mistake is given to the status of truth, if a mistake is given the status of truth, it's really, really happened. It's really a problem. It's broken. To what can it be brought then? It has to be brought to a judge who recognizes broken and death and decaying things. They'll know what to do with it. So here we go. The quote, holiness, when we did holiness last week, the holiness of sin is kept in place by just this strange device that mistakes are real and deserve punishment and something's broken and there's harm and cost to follow. If that's the deal. As truth, okay, it should be in quotes perhaps, as truth it is inviolate and everything is brought to it for judgment. As a mistake, it must be brought to truth. Because a mistake is something where it's time for the miracle. It's time for a shift in perception. You recognize it was a mistake and not the truth. Do not burden yourself with illusions. Do not burden yourself with illusions. Do yourself a favor and do not burden yourself with illusions. Take the mistake to the truth. We did it many, many times as we went around the room and said what the opposite of a mistake is. Mm. It's freedom. It's understanding. It's intentionality. You just turn it and understand the causes and conditions were inevitable and you're free. Mm. And everything that we talked about is a way to undo what otherwise would become real doo-doo. See, I'm working on being a poet, so I had to practice. Okay.
You have a deft hand.
What a compliment. Okay, it's impossible to have faith in sin because sin is faithlessness. From this author's perspective, you can't do it. You can't actually practice, right? What is faith? Faith is trust. What is faith? Faith is actually acting on your beliefs. That's what faith is. So it's impossible to act on sin. To actually trust sin. To actually operate with separation real. Anytime you see the word separation in this entire book, I mean, word sin in this entire book, you can swap it for separation. This is the message Course is giving across. The only sin that you've actually tried to experience is true. Is.
What did you say faith was, Andrew? Faith is acting on
your beliefs.
Beliefs.
The book is correcting the only sin that matters, the book is working to correct, is that separation is real. See, you feel you really are separate from everything and everybody, and God too. And that has such a high cost to it. It's so wrong. It's so not loving. There's no room for love. There's no room for joining if separation is real. The Course has a great little quote. It says, you cannot be totally committed sometimes. And separation means you're not ever joined or joining. It's not possible. It's the only thing. So anytime you see the word sin, you can pop in the word separation and you will see the teaching flow.
And yeah. Mistake validates that separation.
Proves it. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's another separation that has occurred, is that boss broke into 50 separate pieces. Mm-hmm. Some of them so small they'll never come back together.
Damn.
So the only way to get around that is to just have complete belief in the fact that we are not separate, no matter how we feel.
Yes.
Right?
That our feelings of separation are misinformed. Yeah. They're coming from an unreliable source, mm-hmm. a chaotic source. The feelings of unity come from a reliable source. You have to rise up your identity mm-hmm. in order to have a true source of unity, a thought. Your thought comes from unity. It cannot be coming from a struggling, separate identity. Mm-hmm. To look at it with eyes of the Holy Spirit, to look at it with the Christ vision, is to see, even in a situation where the eyeballs are reporting differences and broken pieces, the vision of the mind is reporting a oneness event again. Mm. It comes from a different source. Same vision. That's why the miracle applies only when there's a problem. Miracles only deal with mistakes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Good. We can go on and on about that. We got to finish this paragraph. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now. Okay. It's impossible to have faith in sin, for sin is faithlessness, for that same reason. Sin is faithlessness because you're avoiding the truth perfectly if you believe in separation. That's the way to avoid the truth of oneness, is to be fully, fully dedicated to separation. Faithlessness in the truth. Yet, it is possible to have faith that a mistake can be corrected, which is what Cecilia was saying. She's there now. She owns it. She has the operating faith as a default. That if something goes wrong, if her heart sinks, well, she can go in and rise it up. She uses a miracle. She says you can't just lie to herself. She knows that she can look at it with the Holy Spirit, with some quietness going on. And look at it again with the spiritual eye instead of the ego's eyes. Now she's free to correct it and raise her heart back up, even as she has to deal with the broken pieces. I saw this great little saying the other day, and it said something to this effect. It said that the love that goes into reassembling a broken vase and making it again, undoing the mistake, is greater than the love that just hung on to it being on the shelf perfect. The love that puts it back together.
Japanese, there's a term, I think it's kiratsu or something, about the extended beauty of something that's been reassembled.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. There it is. Nice. Well, we're right on time to have a circle. I'm moving my marker. Yes. Okay, let's have a circle. I hope that wasn't a mistake. Because we're mysterial mistake makers. We are serial mistake makers. It's just going to be... It's right, Jeff? Yes. Mistakes are the way of life.
Never again.
Again and again and again and again. Let's see you make it home without maybe a rolling stop. Or wandering the line. Or saying the wrong thing tomorrow at work. Let's see you just do one whole day without a mistake. You go ahead and try that. Tell me how it worked out. Maybe it's just the way it is, you mistakers. What we're called here to do tonight is to look at the opposite of mistake. You hear how beautiful it was. Intentionality. You know, often it was, and the opposite of mistake is a creation. You know what a miracle is? Seeing the opposite? It's 180 degrees, what your eyes are reporting. It's the miracle seeing the exact opposite. That's what makes it easy, because it's 100% the other way, not 99%. That's what makes it easy. But it does take some courage to reverse what your body and your history is telling you to do. It does take some courage. But then mistakes we can fix. And the clue is that it's fixable. Is the fact that it's your own power that puts the cost on any mistake anyway. A lot of people don't even know about it, right, David? It's all in your head. They don't even know, but you know, and you're holding yourself to it. Oh, you're stinking thinking. That's it. Yeah. It's just a mistake. So mistakes happen, and they happen automatically and all the time. There's no order and difficulty in mistakes. There's no order and difficulty in mistakes. Because all expressions of love are maximal. And that's up to you. You are the source of love in your life. It never came from the outside, and it never will. You are the source of love in your life. You are the source of miracles in your life. You will change your mind, and then you will experience that change. If you go up, you'll be free. So forgive all the mistakes starting now. Thank you, thank you. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you. Wow. That's good, man. Yeah, yeah. That was really nice.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Got a little shift, a little change of perception there. You know?
Yeah, that'll fade, I'm sure. But that's where it's going.
Oh, I know.
What I did have a time, it is what it is.
I was. Yeah, I was sitting to my heart now.